unknown parts of metropolitan New York City. I am the hip and the Sizzly.
Yes, I like that soft kind of muted crescendo. Yes, yes. Hello, H&L Nation. How are you be on this fine evening, the 7th day of February, or of course it could be morning, afternoon, whenever you might be tuning in. We may have a live listener. If she's bored in her class right now, she might be tuning in. So hello to you too. And a very fine welcome as we are post big event Thursday after a couple of big events that took place only a few days ago. As only a few days ago, it was America that was subjected to, I don't know, what would you say was kind of a dull, boring, tedious spectacle that was more style than substance, complete with a mediocre performance from the biggest star, along with periodic shots of the star's fembot spouse. And of course, I'm referring to the State of the Union address. And of course, Super Bowl, that thing also was a few days ago, boring as hell. What do you say, Mr. Hip?
Why don't I say what we are? We are a New York sports podcast. If you didn't catch that drift, well, yes. And this is our third episode back after about a 9-month hiatus. We'll try to keep the 9-month hiatuses once and for all. And look, it's, you know, post Super Bowl, it's kind of like now it's time to start thinking about baseball because pitchers
are dog days of February. Yeah.
Of course. And look, New York teams in basketball and hockey not doing too well. We have an outlier there, which we'll talk some more about later on.
Outlier, but indeed.
You know what? It's a big lull in sports. I mean, you have college basketball. You know, that's going to heat up as the divisional play is well underway there.
About a month away. We got the conference tourneys beginning up probably a month.
But you know what we'll do is we'll give our obviously unique spin on the Super Bowl, which
very unique. Yeah, I'm sure with this, the things that people have never heard.
Even though there's been over 15,000 takes already, and I want to talk about some proposed changes to rules of Major League Baseball and of course the HMOZ and the Beer of the Week. So hey. Super Bowl was a dandy. Hey, those people in the box pools, I think the only combinations of 3-0, 0-0, 3-0, 3-3 were the only ones who won. You had nothing weird there, almost no scoring. A lot of non-football fans were just very bored because, you know, they like watching big plays happen. And, quite the shortage of that. I thought it was going to be like the fastest Super Bowl ever because there were just so many. I think the Rams punted on their first 8 drives. Like
7, yeah, Super Bowl record.
Where to begin with records, right? Lowest scoring Super Bowl game ever. What was 21-14 was the lowest scoring game previously?
I think there was a 16-6 game before. I know there was definitely a 16-6 game. Might have been maybe one that was lower scoring than that. I don't know. Who cares? From the early 70s, WGS. But this one was...
Everything that you and I expected based on our predictions.
Well, to be fair, I did predict the Patriots would win by 10 points, and they did win by 10 points. So and I hit on that one.
you hit the over as well.
Oh, obviously. Yeah, for poor fools that wanted to parlay and over.
Paying attention to the most at first was Todd Gurley, and I remained baffled the entire football game with, and they kept going to Gurley, and there he is on the sideline, like with hands in his, you know, they have that look, the football player look, where the hands are in the neck area, and they're like using it almost to tug a little bit, like it's a place to hold, you know?
Oh, yeah, like they're choking themselves. Yeah, the hands going around the neck, and like you think, like, what? It's like the standard pose. Yeah. It's just,
you know, and they're like just holding it, and I don't know, like it just was baffling. Like, why is CJ Anderson seeing the field? Before and after the game, the Rams were adamant. Todd Gurley is healthy. Well, you gave the dude 16 total touches in between the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl. The dude had probably, and I could pull up the list, 10 games with at least 16 carries during the regular season. He had, you know.
He had 1,800 all-purpose yards. 1,800.
and you give him 16 total touches.
In 14 games. He didn't even play the last two games. 14 games.
Completely bizarre, and I just think that they're full of it. There has to be an explanation for this. There's no way CJ Anderson gives your team a more favorable offensive position by having him on the field. I don't care. No offense to CJ Anderson, but Todd Gurley established that he is, you know, he was like a consensus number one fantasy pick. Like, you know, him or he is the one of the few bell cows in the league, and yet
he don't was forget David Johnson. Oh, and his 600 all-purpose yards.
Jared Goff was not playing well at all. He was terrible, and they didn't even try to get Gurley the ball. It was just beyond bizarre to me. Like, I don't lose with Gurley like getting bottled up. I don't care. Like, were they out coaching them? Did McVay outthink himself by just sticking to the pass and saying that the Patriots are defending the run and we're not even going to bother? Well, I don't care. Make them stop it. But they didn't even try.
Nope. Terrible. Just a brutal. I mean, from start to finish. I mean, well, Gurley was, you know, one of the things that I highlighted in our preview show. And I said that if he had a similar game like what he did in the championship game, they would lose. Sure enough, they lost. And because Goff was, like you said, he was awful. He could not have played a worse game if he tried. It was brutal to watch. Now, full disclosure, for those that watch the game with me that are listening, they're going to go, well, Eric, how would you know? The first half, you were kind of consumed with beer pong. True, most of the first half, I was kind of in and out. Beer pong, the game was terrible. I did go back and I pretty much watched like the whole game again, got the gist. And I did watch pretty much the whole second half live. But anyway, so yeah, Gurley, it's amazing. And the quote after the game from the head coach, from the boy wonder, he said, and he made, you know, he swore that he was healthy. He's healthy. He was fine. And he said, we had gone in knowing that we wanted to kind of almost have a shared load between he and CJ Anderson. What CJ Anderson is me plus 70 pounds. That's what he is. I mean, he is not a guy that was going to have any kind of impact against that defense. The Patriots bottle up those kind of runners. What have we seen with the Patriots in the Super Bowl, specifically against the run over the last couple of years with the Eagles and the Falcons? Last year, it was Jay Ajayi killing him on the edge. Blunt, too, and Blunt's a bigger guy, but he was also killing him on the edge. 2 years ago, it was Freeman killing him on the edge. Gurley is better than both of those guys. He's one of the best backs in the league. Even if he's not doing much in the running game, get him the ball in space. Throw him the football. Get him out of the backfield. Goff, like you said, again, awful. Nothing. He could not get into any kind of rhythm. He didn't know where the laces were when the game started. Give him easy throws. Get Gurley in space. Screen passes, bubble screens. The way that they were playing defense, the Patriots, smallish in the secondary. Do what you need to do to get your quarterback into a rhythm. Damian Williams. In the championship game, he's Damian Williams. He's a third string running back. He caught five balls for 66 yards. He killed the Pats in the second half. It's baffling. And if he was healthy, if he was hurt, fine. Say he was hurt. Sorry, he was hurt. He was 100%. We knew we would get him in the game some, but we didn't know how he would respond, yada, yada. Fine. Don't tell us he's healthy and give him the ball 11 times. Insane. Just insane. And he was out coached by 20 miles in this game, McVay. And, I that was obviously one of the themes of the game. And again, just really another quote. He says, when you look at the overall, this is McVay, when you look at the overall work that a player of Todd's caliber got, it was in large part due to the fact that when we had gone to the game saying we wanted to get both of those guys involved. And then as a result of us not being quite as efficient or not being able to convert on those third downs, it just limits the opportunities.
But why do you want to get both guys involved? Exactly. You didn't do that earlier in the year with Malcolm Brown and Todd Gurley.
Brown.
You didn't need somebody else to get involved. He was pretty much on the field every single play. Just bizarre. Yeah, obviously, there's more to this than we know. And that has to be it. I mean, how... Sean McVay is not a fool. There has to be more to it.
He was a fool in this game. He was out, and he said after the game, I guess you give him credit. I mean, he's like, hey, I was out coached by a mile. He made no adjustments. Goff played a little bit better in the second half, but he was that brutal in the first half. They, like you said, punched the ball seven times.
I mean, look, Goff had two terrible throws, probably more than two, but the one where he threw the duck to Cooks, which was a lob, and it needed to be
that was one of the biggest plays of the game. I mean, that was
and then the interception, where they were driving down a touchdown, right?
That was a 10-3. Yep. And he threw the wounded duck up in the air. That was basically a
terrible pass. But, you know, the thing was, the two passes immediately before that were right on the money. Goff was in a rhythm on that drive. And then he threw that awful pick under pressure, just threw that ball like basically a pop up. And then the Patriots put him away.
Yeah, well, Cooks, the play before that, before the interception, I mean, Cooks had the ball in his hand. I mean, the two Cooks plays, I mean, those are the ones that you're going to think of when you think back to this game, if anybody's going to want to even think back to this game. The two plays, the Cooks play in the end zone where Goff missed him by, 20 seconds, and he still, even when he saw him and threw the ball, if he would have zipped it in there, it's probably still a touchdown. Instead, he throws a lob, which McCourty, good job by him. McCourty sees, reads the play, is able to get back in time, knock the ball away. So nice job by McCourty. But if Goff sees him, you or I could have made that throw. Cooks was that wide open. You saw on TV just how wide open he was. And then before the interception, Cooks had the ball in his hands. He has two guys draped over him, fine, but the ball was there. It was a good throw. Ball was there. 1,000% should have had it, dropped it. If he catches that ball, obviously, now we're tied and see what happens. But it was just an awful, it was a terrible football game. I mean, look, the defenses both played great. I heard a few of the, contrarians that had to go, oh, well, I mean, this was old school football. It was so compelling to watch. No, it wasn't. This was not a compelling game to watch. I've seen defensive slugfests before that was great theater. That was great football. That was great TV. I think back to the Giants 49ers championship game from 2011 or 2012 calendar year when the two teams, I mean, it was just two heavyweights throwing haymakers. That's not what we got in this game. You got a quarterback that didn't know where the laces were when the game started in Goff, and then Brady, who had just a very ordinary, mediocre game, but because he's Brady, he made the plays at the end when he had to. Gronk and Edelman and Gronk, and then the touchdown, game over. And then there's really just not much else to talk about, but you single out Wade Phillips, who put together a fantastic game plan to limit the Pats, and then you obviously Belichick, the master, the genius, and the real genius in this game, coming up with a game plan that completely limited the second highest scoring offense in the league to 3 points, mixing up zone and man coverage, just playing a lot more zone than they usually do. Gilmore had a very good game. I mean, overall, I mean, had a good game. I guess struggled a little bit in the first half with Cooks, but whatever. Hightower and Flowers making their presence felt again after the performance that they both put on a couple of years ago. Hightower, maybe the biggest play in Pat's Super Bowl history, sacking Ryan and getting the fumble there in that game. But performances by the defense is both great. Hats off to both. Maybe Phillips should criticize on that last drive by the Pats. Get bodies on Gronkowski. Don't let him beat you. Brady made the plays that he had to, and that's why the Pats win. They win because they never beat themselves. They are fundamentally sound, and when the game's on the line, their quarterback makes the plays that he has to make, and that's the story of the ball game.
Tony Romo couldn't even, he couldn't even help the ratings here because the game was so bad. There's only so
he
much-
even said in the second half, like in the third quarter, he was like, "Is this painful to watch?" I mean, it was, I'm paraphrasing. He was like, "Is this painful to watch or what?"
Yes, it is. It was. I don't think it was a shock to anyone that Edelman was the MVP. I mean,
very steroid guy, you mean?
Right. So, interestingly, I forgot about this, but if the NFL adopted the Major League Baseball rule when it comes to a regular season suspension for performance enhancing drugs, Edelman would not be eligible for postseason play at all.
Perhaps his performance in this game was enhanced as well by something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe as a rule, you get a suspension. It's the first one is 80 games. You cannot play in the postseason. It's brutal. But I didn't see too much commentary surrounding that aspect of Julian Edelman.
Oh, nothing. Absolutely nothing. Everybody forgot probably because nobody cares when there's terror.
I did see it on Twitter after the game.
Well,
but
yeah. I mean, nothing gets by the Twitter.
Not say anything about it. I mean, you can't expect them to. But I mean, look, at least from what he did on the field. And then there was talk, is that Edelman's got to be a Hall of Famer now because he has the second most receiving yards in the postseason of anyone. Guessing you either know, or if you don't know, you can guess who number one is.
Jerry?
There it is.
Yeah, that's Jerry. Well, I mean, Edelman, he's had some fantastic performances in the playoffs. I mean, in the Super Bowl. I mean, he was good in. He didn't play last year; he was hurt. But he played. He had a couple huge catches in the game against the Falcons. He was great. He was fantastic in the game against the Seahawks. Everybody forgets because you remember solely the decision not to run Marshawn Lynch on the goal line by the Seahawks. By Pete Carroll at the end of the game there, but Edelman was fantastic in that game. I mean, he might have been the best player on the field for the Pats in that game. He has been a terrific playoff performer. Paul, I don't care. You know, he's a Hall of Famer. Not a Hall of Famer. I don't want to get into that debate because I just don't care. You know, if you think he is, fine. If he's not, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. But he was very good in this game. But the MVP of this game wasn't anybody on the field. It was Belichick and his staff and Flores and whoever you want to give credit to for the defensive game plan. There was, if you want to give it to, Gilmore, who had a nice stat line and, again, played well, who had the pick at the end of the game, or you don't want to give it to, Hightower or one of the other defensive players, that's fine. But Belichick and the coaching staff coming up with this game plan and just baffling the boy wonder on the other side, who was like a deer in the headlights along with his quarterback. And I mean, this was as bad a beatdown. And the one thing, this game was within 3 points the whole game. And did you ever think for a second? And I know there were, again, a couple of plays, Cooks, we talked about that, the holding call, which was at 3-3, which was a huge play in the game. Gurley had just pulled off a run. You're like, oh, Todd Gurley signing. Look at this. And they call it back on a holding call, which was you just hate the holding calls because they're just, you just never know what is and what isn't holding. So it's just like, really? Was it that bad? I mean, whatever. But it was a 3rd and 20, that was the drive right before the Pats got the ball back and scored the go-ahead game-winning touchdown. McVay just gave up on a 3rd and 22, ran the ball into the line when, hey, try and make a play there. I know it's 3rd and 22, but who cares? Try and make a play. Didn't, gave up. Ball goes right back to the Pats, and here they come. Game over. So,
there were a couple of plays that I thought were, at the end of the day, it didn't matter because the Patriots won. But I'm just looking at the game log. It was 3rd and 8 in the first quarter from the Rams 31.
Yep.
You remember what the Patriots did on that play? You acknowledge that you were a little distracted from understandably so.
Well, like I said, I did go back and watch pretty much all that. 3rd and 8 when?
6:17 left in the first quarter.
Pats had the ball.
They actually called a timeout before that play.
Oh, were you talking about when Belichick called timeout because, the Pats had the ball or the Rams had the ball?
Yep, Pats had the ball, 6:17 left, 3rd and 8, at the Rams' 31-yard line.
And I remember, you have to tell me.
They ran a draw, which I thought was really interesting. I guess they were just trying to get Gostkowski a little bit closer, but I'm like, why? There's no score here. You're facing the number one scoring offense, and you're running a draw on 3rd and 8 from the Rams' 31-yard line. I just thought that was really strange. I mean, nobody's talking about it because the Patriots won, but it was weird. I guess they hit a field goal, and it worked out in the end, but I still thought it was strange.
Yeah, right. I mean, Gostkowski missed one. I guess he was jinxed by Jim, who was like, oh, no field goals missed in this building all year. And then Tony's like, oh, did you just jinx him? Sure enough, the ball gets hooked wide. So that was kind of funny. And then Jim had the line.
It was 9:48 left, because I'm looking at the game log here. In the second quarter, it was an 18-yard pass to Robert Woods along the sideline. And it was questionable whether Woods got a second foot down and no challenge, which I thought, because that was like the first big play that the Rams had, and it was 2nd and 5, 18 yard, and they didn't challenge it, which I thought was interesting as well. Now, maybe they only had one timeout left, so they didn't want to give up their last timeout, but it's the first half. What's the big deal? Was one timeout, but I thought that was strange.
I mean, look, any play, you know, can be pivotal, especially in a close game like that. Another thing you could point to is it was an atrocious call against the Rams. I mean, the Rams had 9 penalties in this game, I think, to the Pats 3. So, you know, the Pats just always seem to get the calls in these games. But there was an atrocious call. They called, I think, a helmet to helmet. They didn't even know who the hell it was on the field. Even Tony and Jim are like, well, who is it on? And it was on a screen pass. It would have been third, I think, at 14. But, I mean, it was just a great form tackle. It was just a great play, a great defensive play. They swallowed up a screen, and they call how about the helmet or whatever the hell they called, unnecessary roughness, automatic first down. It would have been third down and 14. And those type of plays in a close game where the offenses are doing nothing, field position could be everything. So, I mean, that was a huge play in the game. There was a play with Goff on the sideline, was hit. Was it late? Was it not late? But, you know, Tom Brady, I'm sure, you know, anybody breathes on Tom Brady, there's a, you know, he comes up screaming, ah, someone touched me. Oh, he farted on me. Where's my call? I mean, that's, you know, that's just the Pats rule.
But he's Tom Brady rules. He just absorbs hits better than anybody else. His body is just special in the way he absorbs contact.
Well, I'm just saying, but anytime he takes contact, there's a flag. It's an automatic pass interference. If you even look at Tom Brady, you get flagged for pass interference. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, again, you know, we can go back to plays, and it's just there's not a lot to break down here. I mean, think about how much fun we had a couple of years ago breaking down that Atlanta's Pat game.
We're already overdoing the breakdown right now.
Yes, I mean,
we move on from the breakdown. How about you?
I had a few other. I mean, if there's anything else that you wanted to get in, I mean, there's really. I think we touched on all the key plays in the game. I have a few interesting stats that I wanted to share. I mean, if there's anything more that you wanted to get to in terms of the game itself.
Nope.
No. All right. So you want to move on, you're saying. So actually, in this game, we talked about the 7 punts, first time in the history of the bowl. You want to guess how many red zone plays were run in this game? How many plays in the red zone?
7.
Lower. Previous low was 5. This set a record. Oh. One play in the red zone. That was after the Gronk catch, the touchdown run by Michelle.
One red zone play the entire game. That's
the only play run in the red zone all game long. The previous low was 5. Amazing. Longest punt in Super Bowl history. Jim called it the highlight of the game to that point. Oh, he was so excited. It was the Rams kicker, Hecker, the punter, Hecker. Who had more touches in the first half than Gurley and Cooks combined. Think about that. The punter for the Rams had more touches in the first half than Gurley and Cooks combined. Highlight of the game, said Jim at that point. That was a good line by Jim. Well done. The Rams are the second team ever not to score a touchdown. The 71 Dolphins. That was actually the game with the muff punt in the comedy of errors. Actually might have been the lowest scoring one before this one. Rams ran 60 plays and 27 were for 0 or negative yardage. 27 of the 60, 0 or negative yardage. This was interesting. Over under 56, beginning of the game, 56. Yep. It came in 40 points under the over under with 16. That is the biggest under in 30 years for any, not playoff, not Super Bowl, any NFL game. 30 years. The biggest under.
The biggest discrepancy between
biggest discrepancy, yes, between the total points and the over under. Yes.
And how much it was under by. Wow. Yep.
30 years. Any game. Any NFL game. 30 years. Any game. And the previous, actually, if you want to – this was interesting. I saw the previous the differential was a game this year, too, between the Colts and the Jags that ended in 6-0. Remember, the Colts were shut out. Andrew Luck, after throwing, you know, a zillion touchdown passes, that was actually, you know, I think in the 50s and came – or 40s or whatever, came in at 39.5. So, but this game exceeded by half point. Comparison of this year and last year's Super Bowl. Total points, 74-16. Touchdowns, 9-1. Total yards, 1151 to 667. Want to guess the punts? How many punts there were last year?
Not many.
There were 14 punts in this game. There was 1 last year. 14 last in this game, 1 all of last year. I mean, for those that were saying last year, oh, too much offense. Oh, it's all about the offense, offense, offense. Well, you got your defensive struggle this year, but it was a hell of a bore.
Everyone is over it, and I think they're over it now. Mm-hmm. If they weren't before, mm-hmm. I think you just put the nail in the coffin.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Yeah. See, but at least you see this game, at least, even though it was a long, boring, drawn-out spectacle, it did have the amazing Adam Levine at halftime pulling off his shirt and dancing with his tattooed torso. But the State of the Union, another long, boring, tedious, drawn-out spectacle. Where was Mitch McConnell yanking off his shirt and dancing and showing off his tattooed torso during the halftime of the State of the Union? Oh, we didn't have that.
To your disappointment.
Yes, indeed.
Well, you can create your own right now. Let's do it. Let's see your best your attempt to show us what you would have liked to seen with your turgid state.
Yes, very much very unturgid watching this game. And actually, I would say they were probably, and I didn't see any of the halftime shows. I would say there probably were more Maroon Fan Fives, or whatever the hell the band is, in the building than there were Rams fans. Was there a single Rams fan in that building? I mean, it sounded like the place was Gillette Field. Was there a single Rams fan in that building?
I was kind of glad they played Hard to Breathe. That was like their first hit. We're kind of trying to guess what songs they would play.
I saw the stupid images after the fact on the news, but I had no idea what the hell was going on during. Amazing though. I actually saw a video showing a reaction of the Rams fan. We'll get to the ratings in a second, but I saw a video. This could have been one of HMOZs of a reaction in an LA bar after the Rams won the championship, the NFC championship, with the game-winning field goal. And it was just like five guys just kind of like glancing up at the TV, and then the kick goes through and the celebration on the field, yay! And the people in the bar are like, okay, yeah, they're in a clap, 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 yeah. And then someone came running in and said, "Guys, Kate Beckinsale's sister's hairdresser's former accountant's here." And everybody went, "Oh my God, where?" it's funny because it's true. And how about the ratings for this game? Lowest in 10 years, whatever, who cares? It was the Patriots, boring game, whatever. But is your bitter hipster beer half full or half empty? L.A., the market of L.A. posts a 44 rating, which is its highest rating in 23 years. Or bitter hipster beer half empty, second lowest rating for a Super Bowl city ever. Mr. Hip, you want to guess which city is number one for lowest rated Super Bowl team city for the game ever? I'm asking because it's not like it's 1970 Dolphins Miami or something. Otherwise, it would have been W guess.
When Trent Dilfer was in the Super Bowl.
Oh, for Tampa? Nah, that's a good guess, but nope. You're close though. It's close. It's a Super Bowl around that time.
What is it? That was my guess.
The Our Fair City, Metropolitan New York City, the New York market for the 2000 Super Bowl between the Ravens and the Giants. New York, the lowest rated hometown, home city, whatever, Super Bowl market ever. Second most, second of the dubious honor distinction.
Wait, so you said highest rating in 23 years for LA for a football game for them, basically?
Yeah. Since 96. They did a 44, which is still the second shittiest since New York in 2000.
It's all relative, I guess.
Yeah, so that's why I said BHB half full or half empty. Yeah. Yes. Somewhere else. Yeah. What about Jim and Tony? Were you turgid for anything Jim or Tony said?
That's right. They couldn't do enough. It's all their fault. All right.
Any other thoughts on that? That's all I got. No.
I was done about 5.5 minutes ago. As usual, we got to rein it in. Hey, look, but now we got a New York Islanders playoff run. Now we're at it. The New York Islanders emerged from the All-Star break, and they lost a 1-0 shutout game at home against Tampa on Friday, and then they came back with a nice win against the Kings on Saturday night. They lost to the Bruins on Tuesday, and they are about to drop the puck in New Jersey tonight, but for at least standings-wise, They got a 2-point lead with a game in hand on the Caps. And, you know, 52 games, we still got a lot of hockey to go. But every single game now, the spotlight should be on this team, where they're positioned. So away we go. Let's do it. Let's see what happens.
Yes, indeed.
Every game, if I'm home and it's on, I'm watching. I'm ready. I'm locked in.
Well, what else are we going to watch? The Knicks? Are we going to?
What else are we going to watch? It's a good point. I really only have that, and Michigan basketball is my default go-tos right now. Until baseball.
Yes, indeed. But yes, those New York Islanders still in first place. Amazing. But right now, you watch this team, and especially the way they played against Boston the other night. If they're going to have any chance of making any kind of run this year, they are going to need to make some kind of move as they are really struggling offensively. I mean, look, this is a foundation. This is the very, very beginning of whatever Lou and Barry have planned and whatever their broader vision, long-term vision is for the team. This is the very, very early stages. I mean, this was not supposed to be a year where, I mean, this was a year that Lou thought he'd be able to put his feet up, I'm sure, by the trade deadline and like, hey, I'll just trade away a couple free agents. You know, we'll get a nice draft pick and, you know, away we go. Uncle Leo, he's rubbing off on those young kids. Away we go. But here they are, first place, but struggling offensively. The Barzal line has just gone stale. So you're going to see Dal Coll, it looks like, playing on his left side tonight with Josh Bailey, who's reverted to 2016 Josh Bailey form for those.
Everybody's favorite, the 2016 version.
Yes, well, that definitely drew the ear of the lip for those that remember, as I wanted to shoot him into the sun. But he, as well as much credit as we have given him, especially me, and I did a 180, but I think I'm coming back around full circle because he has been that bad over the last month, playing exclusively with Barzal. I mean, he's playing like he doesn't have a pulse, so he has to get his head out of his rear end. We'll see if there's any other shakeups. Dal Coll should get a chance to play with Barzal. I mean, Dal Coll is a former first round, fifth overall pick who has now two career goals. It's, you know, time to see if he can actually be a contributor offensively. But the question is going to be, what is Lou going to do with the trade deadline? What are they going to do with the free agents? We talked about that last time. They had the three. Are any of them going to be signed by the time the trade deadline gets here? Who knows? Do they decide to move one or maybe two of them, Lou, if he says, I don't know if I'm going to sign them. Do I really want to let them walk? Or do I maybe try and get a little creative and bring in another guy or two to fill their spots and get them out? We'll see. It'll be interesting, to say the least. The Toronto game where that guy, that jerkhead in Toronto, makes his return to New York will be right after the deadline. So that should be a hell of a good time. The H&L, I'm sure, will have to do something either right before, right after, something for that big event. The Islanders right now, they're still getting great goaltending. They're Barry Trotz is working his magic, and they're not going to just go. They're not going to fall off a cliff. Their goaltending holds up the way it has. They're not going to fall off a cliff. They'll definitely come down to the wire for maybe the division. Definitely for the playoffs. We'll see where they fall. I'm sure you're very turgid watching. You said you always make sure to put them on. I'm sure you're very turgid watching them lately. Yes, Mr. Hemp. Yeah.
So they're playing the Devils tonight.
Indeed.
On Saturday, the Wild on Sunday, the Sabres next Tuesday. So when you're watching them now, like, what do you – just give us, like, two things for people that maybe are now – well, they definitely are now enticed to watch the Islanders based on your assessment. So, like, what are two things that somebody hasn't been watching closely should, like, try to pay attention to that you think is important to gauge how this team is going to, you know, perform over the next couple months?
Well, I mean, they're rolling four lines. Casey Cizikas, who is one of the most underrated, unheralded players in the league, has been phenomenal this year. He's in double. He's already set a career high, I think, in goals. Yep.
What number is Casey?
53. Yeah, watch 53. He is. Whatever you consider their third, fourth line. I mean, it's the de facto fourth line, but. I would say right now, I mean, they're like getting third line. I mean, the ice time has been pretty evenly distributed depending on the game flow, the game script, special teams, yada, yada. But Cizikas has been absolutely fantastic this year. Matt Martin has come in and played a lot better than I ever could have predicted. I mean, look, the guy bleeds orange and blue. And even Clutterbuck, who we've been very hard on, you know, clutter suck and clutter. Yes, another word that rhymes with suck. I was ready to, you know, ship him out. I hated the contract that Garth gave him, but he has played much better, especially over the last, you know, I would say month and a half. And, Uncle Leo stinks, but I mean, he tells apparently funny jokes and he's Lou's buddy. So, you know, Uncle Leo, I guess we have to leave alone. Filippo has played, you know, better than I could have anticipated, considering he's 100 million years old.
You answered my question. Is it two things to like look out for? You're telling us how guys have been doing. I mean, and that's great and all.
All right. Key on Cizikas and key on Devin Toews. Devin Toews could be a budding star. I'm not going to go so far as say superstar. Two players to watch. Cizikas, Devin Toews. Devin Toews has been everything and more that Islander mania and all those guys that follow the prospects and the minors and all that. I knew nothing about him. I never saw him before. I knew he belonged in the NHL by his second shift. I said, nope, he belongs. He should never touch the minor guys again.
U.S. is how it's pronounced.
Yes. We brought him up. I know we brought him up before, but I had to say him again. He skates. He's an excellent skater. His defensive awareness. I mean, he's always well positioned. Look, he'll make a mistake here and there, but for the most part, his hockey IQ is through the roof. He's a terrific skater. He can lead the rush. He's going to get more power play time. You're going to see his points, you know, slightly increase as he gets more involved in the offense. Those are the two guys. Cizikas just not going to get enough credit for what he does. And Devin Toews may be a budding star.
Okay. All right. Yes. Good enough. Good. Well, we'll revisit this thread next show.
Well, do we dare talk about the NBA trade deadline today? Do we dare talk about the nine Knicks that were valued by Forbes at what, $4.5 billion as the value keeps going up as the team sucks even more every single day? Trading away their future superstar unicorn. Oh, he's going to be amazing. 7'3", can play inside, outside. Oh, Kristaps Porzingis. And he's gone.
He's gone.
In the bat of an eye. Did you have any reaction, any kind of emotional reaction when you saw the headline, or were you like W. Gas indifferent?
No. I mean, the thing is, he's been kind of out of sight, out of mind. He hasn't played. So I think you kind of get detached from it. In that sense, where you've gotten used to how, you know, terrible they've been. I don't know. It's like, did you really think if he comes back, this team's suddenly going to be competitive? I don't
think so. No. Well, it had nothing to do with this year. It was just, he was supposed to be the future. He was the face of the franchise, wasn't he? Well, it wasn't all, it was a year ago. He tore his knee, but leading up to that point, looked like he was going to be a guy you were going to build around. Bring in the free agents to play with him, not move him out to bring in, you know, pipe dreams of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant or Kawhi Leonard. I mean, that was the plan. And there's Dolan, you know,
to get a 20-game losing streak. They only got six to go.
Yeah, well, and then what? So they're going to draft, you know, Zion from Duke, who might be a good player, or he might be a guy that you say.
People talk about tanking, but this is a lottery though, and that's the thing. Like your odds are actually not that great of getting the first round pick. Now they are the highest of any other team.
They're even, right? The worst three are even now. I forget, they change it every other year. I don't even know what the hell it is.
It's not something to really tank for, to get one guy. I mean, this is not the NFL where you're in last, you get the number one pick. It doesn't work that way, and the odds are not that great. So that rhetoric of people saying, well, you're going to get Zion. I don't know. Like you can't, that mindset doesn't make any sense to me.
No, that's what they're all pumping up for Knicks fans. Oh, Knicks fans dream of a team with Zion and Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Well, you have to have hope for something, I guess. Right.
A joke. The team's an embarrassment from the owner, who is a loathsome son of a bitch all the way down. They are an embarrassment. I don't even talk to, it's like, don't even, I mean, ugh.
Yep.
Yes. And the NBA trade deadline came by with a whimper. I don't know. LeBron's not happy. And the NBA season, they can cancel right now and just give it to the Warriors. Just say, Warriors, just take your championship and, you know, we'll see you next season. There's nothing to even watch with the NBA at all.
Over.
Huh?
I thought the dynasty was over.
Well, we have to revisit that December 28th Twitter, of course. Yes. And someone, I'm sure, will remind him, and then he'll go, I never tweeted that. I never tweeted that.
And I'm, look, it's February 7th. I'm actually getting pumped for baseball. I mean, the season starts
boring.
Early. Yeah, yeah. Hey, I'm pumped. The season starts. I think it's like March 21st.
Wait, what are you talking about? What do you mean starts? Wait, you mean opening day?
Well, so this
I mean, I know they played it earlier.
And the Athletics are playing in Tokyo.
Oh, they're doing the Tokyo game again.
The game is March 20th, actually, and the game counts. It's a regular season game.
Huh? Look at that.
20th and 21st. Guess what time the game starts?
Well, actually, I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess what I think is the correct time, because I remember that in our nerd days of high school, I remember we were walking around, I think, listening to Howie and who was on the call on the radio then. I guess it was still Gary. I guess it was still Gary and Bob, Howie, or whatever. This was in 2000 when the Mets played the Cubs in Tokyo. And the days of Benny Agbayani and Jay Payton. And,
well, Benny.
Yeah, so.
Started?
It was in the afternoon. So what was it, noon?
No, this is a 5:35 a.m. start. So
okay.
Try next.
Well, no, you know, I guess it was in the morning. That's right. I was thinking it was later in the day, but no, I guess it was in the morning.
5:35 a.m. start.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I guess we're walking around homeroom with the game on.
There you go.
Yes.
And then,
geez, we were up that early. I forgot.
And opening, you know, the opening day is the 28th, which is a Thursday.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, whatever. W guess.
Hey, look, there are proposed rule changes.
Yes.
Actual change that was just announced. It's no longer called disabled list. It's called injured list. And the apparent reason is because of some kind of activist group or groups. You know.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
Saying, you know, it's maybe not a politically correct term to use because of reference to disabled.
Yep.
So now it's the injured list. Breaking news.
Any other humdingers for proposed changes?
How do you feel about removing the DH in the NL?
It's overdue. It's overdue. I know you're going to have the purist and traditionalist. Huh?
But does that mean you're in favor of it?
I at this point it's time. I'm indifferent, really. I could care less. But they all play. The interleague happens every day of the season. So there's no more American and National League. Just it's time. It's enough already.
Good reason. I mean, I just think that
they get uniform. It's enough. This is an archaic rule.
By and large, pitchers can hit, and pitchers have gotten serious injuries from the base paths. And it's just pitchers don't even hit in the minor leagues. There's no. It's all DH. So they're coming in with basically the guys in the NL. They haven't even been hitting in the minors. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I know. I mean, this goes back. I mean, you know, the National League, you know, going back to the, you know, the days of Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, turn of the 20th century, and then the American League. And I mean, and then obviously, I mean, it was the two different leagues, and then DH wasn't introduced until the early 70s. But and the traditionalists and the purists are going to cry, oh, no, no, no. Like, you know, a certain Mets family now, oh, I hate it. I hate it. I want the pitcher. It's more strategy and double shifts. And then, who cares already? The game has changed so much.
And you need to keep the game fresh and interesting and keep younger fans engaged. Yeah. And this is one of those where I think it's a no-brainer. It's not going to happen this year. It's too soon. It's already.
It might. You never know. It could still happen this year.
I don't think so. I think it's you know, it's not fair to the NL teams that didn't plan on meeting with
DH. Yes, that's a fair point.
They'll get a whole offseason to try to target a particular DH, but. Look, they could sign Mike Moustakas tomorrow if they wanted. Like, he's still a free agent. He can DH.
Everybody's still a free agent. Aren't there a couple superstars that are
So Harper and Machado, still teamless. Craig Kimbrell, don't forget about him. Dallas Keuchel, not, you know, definitely a few notches below. But, I mean, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, two top arguably 10 hitters, top arguably five hitters in all of baseball. I mean, we had last year with J.D. Martinez. I actually want to look up when J.D. Martinez signed.
It was beginning of March, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, and look, that may happen again here. And you know what? They sign, and then it's all forgotten. But the fact that it's two now, the fact that it's dragging on this long, they're not going to get those mega contracts. Nobody's signing these guys for $300 million at this point.
Although the Phillies just traded for J.D. Realmuto, so yeah. Derek Jeter's destruction of the Marlins is complete. The wonderful, amazing, we worship at his altar, Derek Jeter, Yankee fans. Yes, he has completely destroyed the Marlins. They'll probably draw like a combined like 82 people all year to watch that team.
Yeah, Caleb Smith and Jose Urena, so don't, you know.
Well, that's right. Everybody remember that the hip is knee deep. And I mean, he could probably name like the best prospects from like the developmental league for every team. So I know nothing about this. I got out of fantasy. I'm out a year and I know nothing anymore. There's some of these names. I'm like, oh, what? So yeah, so the hip is going to have to, the hip will be our resident expert when it comes to who the hell are these guys. Like the Braves or whatever team comes out of nowhere with these young stars, and I'm saying, who, what, huh?
One other significant rule change proposal is that every relief pitcher that's brought in must face at least three batters.
Which is so stupid. That's just absurd.
The pitcher finishes the inning or is injured. Well, I think it's a game flow thing, so you're not doing like the whole, you know.
I know, and I hate it. I hate that they use 17 different pitchers every game, that the starting pitcher goes four innings, and then, oh, got to get him out. Got to get him out. Got to go to the bullpen. I mean, this is why I baseball was so unwatchable. This was one of the worst years of baseball I can remember. It was, for me at least, anyway. I was so bored. The Yankees were maybe the worst 100-team win team ever. The World Series was awful. But, I mean, just one pitching change after pitching change. So I understand that that's what it's going to do. It's still dumb. I mean, it's just still dumb. I don't know. Maybe give me the research, the data as to why it isn't. But right now on the surface, I just think it's dumb. Anyway. So I guess you agree. Like it.
I don't know. I mean, look, if you bring in a relief pitcher and he clearly can't throw a strike, you want to yank him after that first batter. I mean, if he's just, you know, all over the place.
There's several reasons. And then, but I guess if it doesn't carry over to the next inning, if you bring a guy in with two outs, he gets the out, then you can take him out next inning, I guess. Right. Isn't that part of it? So it's just, I mean, like you said, the idea is to speed up the game, but it's baseball. It's just not a fast game. And you know what, you know, you want to keep them in the batter's box, the 20-second pitch clock. That, if you actually enforce it, give the umpire a cow prod and have him, you know, torch and give a shock to the batter every time he tries to take himself out of the batter's box. Oh, back in you go. Don't let the pitchers, you know, step off the mound every other second. That's how they got through games in the 50s and 60s, and they weren't stepping out of the box every other second and getting off the mound every other pitch. Enforce that rule. Go ahead. We'll see. Yep, we lost the hip. Anyway, I guess I'll come back. But the rule changes, I am indifferent. I am just very, very much indifferent at this point. I'm not excited for baseball at all. The hip is obviously more excited than I am right now. And then the other one, five mound visits, who cares? And then 26-man roster instead of 25, whoop-de-doo. The Lips proposed changes. For you Simpsons fans, here are my proposed rule changes for MLB, for Major League Baseball. You can't leave first until you chug a beer. Any man scoring has to chug a beer. Have to chug a beer at the top of all odd number innings, and the fourth inning is the beer inning. That would be the Lips proposed rule changes. All right. Anyway, I guess we'll move on. I have no desire to talk about Mets and Yankees pitching. You know, pitchers and catchers. I cannot talk about Yankee middle relief in February. I know that's what Sports Talk Radio in New York's all about, talking about bench players and middle relief and who should their sixth inning guy be. I don't care. I don't care. Moving on. All right. I guess we basically touched on everything. I will touch on Frank Robinson for a second. Frank Robinson passed away today at the age of 83. Did Frank Robinson. And before my time, I didn't get a chance to see him play. Obviously, I'm only 35 years old. But Frank Robinson, great player, Hall of Famer, involved, first black manager, involved in the game throughout his entire life. I mean, he ate, slept, and breathed baseball, was on those, you know, great Oriole teams. He won the MVP in both leagues. You know, stupidest trade of all time. I mean, Milt Pappas, you know, I didn't see, again, any of these guys play, but, I mean, you read the worst trades of all time list, and you'll always see this one right by the top. I mean, it was that bad, along with Nolan Ryan and Lou Brock and the other ones. But Frank Robinson, again, you know, pioneer, great player, 500 plus, you know, 586 home runs, something like that. Again, involved in baseball his whole life. So he passes away today at the age of 83 years old. And, but I, you know, as somebody who was always involved, very outspoken, clearly was bothered by the steroid stuff. And I mean, was obviously it just killed him seeing the way that the game, the evolving of the game, and just the controversy surrounding the steroid stuff, it just killed him. I mean, every time he talked about it, you could just tell how much it ate his kisses out. And I mean, you could just see he was a tough guy. He wasn't the biggest guy, but a tough guy. And, you know, was very much an ambassador and an envoy for the game of baseball, and was involved with it really throughout really this entire life. And again, 83 years old, passes away today. So we salute Frank Robinson on H&L.
All right. And now it's time for the hipster moment of Zenith. Oh, God, yes.
No, what does he have for us this week? Well, so, as fans of the show, listeners of the show may or may not know, I am I do have a mild fascination with a certain talk show radio talk show host by the name of Mike Francesa. Yes, we haven't mentioned that he has come back after a very long retirement of 4 months. Yes. Anyway, so for those on the Twitters, now this really, I cannot do this hipster moment of Zenith justice because you need to watch the clips on the Twitters. There is a Twitter called Funhouse. It is a Twitter handle back after this. And he encapsulates like in 1 and 2 minute and less clips, you know, the best clips of Mike Francesa going back, you know, really since he's been back. He had some fantastic ones this past week with Mike in Atlanta for the Super Bowl. The best one, though, and again, I can't do it justice, but the best one was Mike talking about how, you know, because on radio, you know, he's in Radio Row and all the athletes and the football guys are coming on to hawk their cheesy wares like Zit Cream and a new workout, Thigh Master and Butt Master and Hemorrhoid Cream and all that. So Mike went on to say that, and again, it's in the clip, players who want to get paid to hawk products, and that's what they do. You know, we're not very much into that stuff, so that's not what we are going to be about. So, and then the clip went on to weave in about 7 or 8 different guys that came on to talk about male testosterone and Nutrisystem and recovery supplements and sports equipment with all these new technology and collagen injection for your knees and for your butt and whatever. And every time he played a clip of a new guy hawking a new product, he would play Mike going, "Oh, players want to hawk their products. We don't do that stuff. We're not about that here." It's absolutely fantastic. It's about a little over 2 minutes. Check it out. Funhouse, Twitter handle, back after this. It is absolutely fantastic. Mike also went on to tell us about how his adoring fans try to interview him every 12 seconds.
When did he say the players row with their products? Like this, like right before the Super Bowl, or like this is from like years ago?
No. Right before. So I think he said it like Friday before he left for Atlanta. So he said it right before he left for Atlanta. Oh, we don't do that stuff.
The handle is actually at back after AFTA.
Okay.
Yes.
It's fantastic. It's everyone is gold.
That is what is most likely to put the lip into a turgid
state. Turgid state, yes.
He doesn't need any product that's being endorsed by a retired NFL player. No, he just needs back after this.
Well, what does anybody really need to get into a turgid state? Why get male enhancement supplements when you can just watch Funhouse back after this to get into a turgid state?
All right, let's bring us on with a fluid that's ingested. Yes.
Well, before that, just one last thing I'll touch on. Well, actually, I wanted to touch on Frank Robinson quickly, who passed away today. A fantastic baseball player, passed away today at the age of 83. Hall of Famer, great player. involved in baseball his whole life. So I just wanted to get that in very quickly. So we send our regards and, you know, we salute Frank Robinson. I just want to touch on the Daily News and how far they have fallen as a just as a entity in general. But I think their sports writers section now, I think they have like three writers or whatever they have left. And their articles now are basically breaking news. And I mean, literally, it'll say breaking news. Zach Britton, the Yankee relief pitcher, whose name ended with an H. Zach with an H. Very hipster, right? Ends with an H. Has changed his last letter of his first name from H to K. Breaking news. Zach Britton, H to a K. Breaking news. It actually said breaking news. Zach Britton changes his name from Zach with an H to a K. Wow. And Adam Gase says the Jets will use naughty language during training camp. So, or it'll be R-rated. That was another big article in the Daily News. Adam Gase says the Jets will use naughty language, terms like poppycock, that'll make Mike Pence blush. All right. Anyway, so we got all that out of the way. It's now time for the final segment of the week. Everybody's favorite, yours and mine. What else could I be referring to other than Hipster Beer of the Week? And take it away, Mr. Hip.
All right. Well, we're going to deviate slightly from this is beer you could always find in the shelves, but I did find it in a can in a bar in New York City. So it's not just at the brewery itself. This is Bissell Brothers. Bissell Brothers is, you don't really find it too often, actually, in these parts. Bissell Brothers from Portland, Maine. But they don't really distribute down here much. But like you're seeing Hulk, The Alchemist is Heady Topper and Focal Banger a bit. You're now seeing Bissell Brothers a bit. So that their flagship beer is called Substance, and it's described as a brightly dank ale that threads many needles. And that's it. And that's your Hipster Beer of the Week.
you found it in a can in a bar in the city. How about that, folks? He found a beer in a can.
And it was only, guess
how much? Instead of suspended from the ceiling, the beer was in a can.
How much it cost?
I'll say $12.
I believe that is correct.
And that's look at that.
That's not a bad price for a 16-ounce can of a craft beer of such kind. Yes. Slurpee goodness.
Slurpee goodness.
Thank you all for listening once again. And we'll do our best to try to keep this lull in the sports world interesting next time. Yes, as always, thank you for listening. Oh God, yes.
All right.
Yes. Right now.